720 WGN, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It is pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Dane Neal in for Patty. Dino Tiberi is to my right, often longtime guest slash, you know, compadre slash the physical embodiment of the channeling of the spirit of Harry Carey. So, and people wonder what Harry Carey did in the off season.
Well, he stayed out in this cold weather. That's exactly what he did on Palm Spring.
That's right, with a Falstaff or something like that.
Well, whatever was cold, preferably Budweiser.
Oh, that's right. Depending on who was endorsing him, he would take care of that obligation. Right. Mike Heideman in the booth as well, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, Dane?
Good to see you. We've got a lot of fun stuff. Patty had some things kind of lined up that we're going to kick into. Plus, we're going to extend a little bit of kind of what Justin was doing, which just was reveling in the kind of holiday moment. It is a beautiful thing to be here. Of course, the studio, Allstate Showcase Studio, has all of the accoutrements of the holiday time. You've got ornaments, right? Ornaments. You've got
trees all decorated. We have things in the windows. Looks good in there.
You've got a Santa with some sort of a chimney mishap with just his legs coming out the bottom. That's a traditional thing here. We've got the tree from, I think it's Tree Time, right? I think it is a sponsored tree. It is awesome. Plus, you look out on Michigan Avenue, a lot of cool things are going on. So on the show today, we are going to talk about some of the holiday things going on. We're going to talk holiday movies with Blake Stubbs a little bit later on in the program. We're going to talk about some of the ways that people are celebrating the holidays outside of, you know, kind of the normal family open presents situation, where Dovetail Brewery is going to be in a little bit later on in the program, talking about a holiday market that they are involved with. And then Miracle, the pop-up holiday bar. You know, it's one thing when you think about this. You know, if you've got yourself a club situation, a cocktail situation, it's one thing if you can tailor it and make it even more holiday-rific, Christmas-y and all those things when you walk in. You know, just like people decorate their house or their neighborhood, you know, people are doing that.
Sure, you get them ready to go. It's Christmas in 2 weeks coming up. Go in the bar and you feel that same festive feeling in the, you know, the way they set it up, and I'm looking forward to hearing all about it.
They're doing this right, so it is a holiday themed pop-up bar cocktail situation. Not only just the decor, I'm guessing they're going to have all those things, but also the cocktails themselves. Are you thinking now, Dino, when you think of this whole team photo of holiday cocktails, things, I mean, they think like the hot toddy, right? That's something.
Yeah, a little Bailey's,
maybe a swizzle stick.
Yeah, some I don't know. I mean, Bailey's and coffee is usually one a drink of choice. You know, for those hardcore drinkers, of course, maybe they get up and have a Bloody Mary on Christmas. That's a little.
Oh, there's nothing
wrong with that. That's good any time of the year.
Yeah, that's when your holiday is. You wake up and maybe you don't have to report to any place,
right?
You know, with any kind of testing facility, or you don't have to operate a heavy machinery or anything. You can go ahead and enjoy the Bloody Mary. So we're going to talk with those guys a little bit later as well. Coming up after 11:35, we are going to have Officer Sanchez in, coming up with the Chicago Police Department Crisis Intervention Team. They've got a new thing that they're implementing. I think it's important. I think as the police department looks to kind of interact with the public in I think just either more productive ways or better ways, or just kind of strengthening that connection that they've got with the general public and all of those different situations that police officers find themselves thrown into. I think this is going to be a new thing where they've got an actual kind of a program to go along with. And I know Mike knows a little bit about it as well. So Mike, give us kind of that thumbnail of the new crisis intervention program coming up. We're going to hear about it after 11:35.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it right on the nose. I mean, the way that the Chicago Police Department has been dealing with a lot of these issues over the past few years and everything, it's about time that they took a positive step in the direction of dealing with the public in a way that is beneficial for both them and the people that they're helping out. So I'm looking forward to speaking to Officer Sanchez.
Yeah, I mean, I think being a little more proactive about it too, just understanding that there's going to be a lot of run-of-the-mill situations that you're going to run into that you can plan for, that you could train for, but then some of these kind of wildcard situations that still are things that people can sort of prepare for, and just on the personality side, you know, just being able to kind of interact with kind of the human condition in a bunch of different ways and put the police in a position to succeed in those interactions. It is quarter after 11 right now, 7:20 WGN. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the holiday options. Dino, I know that you've already kind of implied, trying to gauge my enthusiasm for a Bloody Mary, that is what your gift to me would be. But also, we're going to be talking about, and you can share yours as well, 312-981-7200. Gift options, we've talked about it on a number of different shows, is experiences are one of the things that are now kind of almost the new gift, as opposed to just getting a big box filled with a sweater, which I would actually
right.
appreciate.
Of course.
A vintage Jim Beam decanter that I'm thinking you're probably...
Well, Crown Royal bottle, you know.
Maybe a jacket made out of Crown Royal sure. purple bags.
Yeah, exactly.
We all knew someone who
you
had
use those purple bags to re-gift.
So, and I'm not saying it's either or. It could be and, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But people are enjoying the opportunities to get out there and have experiences. And now with all the advancements with the phone, social media, you're really able to preserve those memories, not only enjoy them for yourselves, for your families, but share them with your friends and the entire world, really, right? And so experiences, whether it's travel or whether it's new cool things. Like I know, Dino, you've always wanted to skydive.
Well, of course, that's on the bucket list, you know, skydive, bungee jump. Let me think of some other silly jump out of a plane.
Climb the Matterhorn.
Climb the Matterhorn? Sure, that's about five on the list.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things people want to do or get out there, do those things, that bucket list. And it's now become kind of not only the bucket list, but the list for Santa. We'll talk about that. I know Mike in the booth has got some of those as well. So a quick break here. We'll be back. It's Dane in for Patty on 720 WGN. 720 WGN in for Patty here on Pretty Late. Dane, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We've got Dino Tiberi to my right, Mike Heidemann in the booth, thinking about Mike and some of the stuff that he does always in and around with his hand on the pulse of the music scene. You know, I think that could be one of the experiences that people would love to do or have or get and receive as a gift too, is that kind of once in a lifetime music experience too. Maybe you want to see a band someplace, or maybe see a band at Red Rocks, right? You know, out in Colorado. I mean, from a sports perspective, it would be really awesome to see, you know, a great series like at Fenway Park or see, you know, obviously Wrigley Field, we're lucky. Or
go to the Super Bowl.
Sure. And watch the Bears. Now you're just getting crazy. But when it comes to experience, travel is often in there. Recently, I had Eileen Ogan. She is a travel guru. Of course, she was here with Chicago Tribune, takingthekids.com, specialized in family stuff. And she is saying that is one of the hottest things, whether it's taking the family to the water park, whether it's traveling by yourself even to take a cooking class in Paris. You know, travel is one of those things. And I think some of those big festivals can also be really cool as well. Now, Mike, you'll go South by Southwest, right? And it's one of those things. It draws people in not only from around the country, but around the world. It's got amazing celebrities, personalities, bands. I mean, it's probably on a lot of people's bucket lists.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no better experience than just going out and traveling and taking a full week to do something that you've never done before in your entire life, or something that, you know, that you can tell a story about for your entire life, because you can do a lot of stuff with a blanket, but there's so much more you can do with like a trip to the Super Bowl, like Dino said. So, I mean, there's a lot of great things that happen, especially South by Southwest as you know, I was on your show lucky yeah. enough to talk about it. This year, in fact, for Christmas, I'm taking a trip to Las Vegas to go see the Misfits and Alkaline Trio.
So wait a minute.
Hit it right on the
was
nose.
That your gift to yourself?
That was, yes, that was my gift to myself. But might I add, my birthday is 2 days after Christmas.
Oh, perfect.
So it's a birthday Christmas combination.
Nice.
So this is making up for all of those gifts. And Mike, throughout history, has it been one of those where you got a lot of gifts that were like, happy birthday, Merry Christmas at the same time? That kind of sucks.
Yeah, of course it sucked. I mean, that's the way it's always been. It's like, oh, you're 8 years old and here's this laser gun or here's this Monopoly game and this is all you're getting this year, so enjoy.
Wow.
Yeah. And also, and just try to throw a surprise birthday party when everyone's out of town. Three or four people show
right.
up, most of them.
Yeah, gone. nobody can make it because they're all doing their own thing this week.
They're kind of busy.
You yeah. almost want to have like a stunt birthday, right? You know, or like Mike's birthday observed, right? It could be in the middle
sure.
of the summer sometime.
Yeah,
do
yeah.
it like 6 months from the actual date.
No one needs
I'm
to
halfway
know.
To my birthday.
Yeah, the
birthday.
The minute that they start asking for my birth certificate to see the proof, it's only when I go to Starbucks with my fake birthday and they don't give me the cup of coffee.
Do they really ever check that? I mean, I can see if it's in an adult beverage situation, they need to make sure that they're not breaking any laws. But, you know, if you're going to say, like, hey, it's so-and-so's birthday, and they come over and do the clap, clap, clap thing, and then they hand it, I mean, they don't really do a lot of fact-checking on that, do they?
Not really. I mean, the restaurants certainly don't. I mean, we've done that where it's been close to the birthday, but not on the actual birthday. And we, you know, like, you know, my dad, we, you know, had it on his birthday, but it wasn't actually on the day. And they came out, did the whole clapping thing, and, you know, sang the song, you know, and then they brought out the little, you know, cake that they ended up charging us for later.
They charge you for it anyway.
Oh, come on. They charge you for it?
Well, yeah. I think it's happened in the past.
But what they don't charge for is the extra entertainment value, right?
Or the bad singing the that they're providing.
The candle usually is gratis, right? That's usually
exactly
comped. But so, Mike, I know you've done a bunch of travel, and you went to one of the places that you went to Amsterdam, right? You just came back from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And this is one of those kind of things. You know, and travel has gotten to the point where it's a little bit more, I don't know, I think people are a little bit more apprehensive about where they go, just because, you know, based on just the nature of the world right now, you know, whether it's in the political sphere or whether it's, you know, unrest or terrorism and all those kind of things. Amsterdam is one of those places you don't hear a ton about. Everyone's heard of it, but it's kind of got this whole kind of very cool, mysterious vibe. What was it like to actually go there?
Oh, wow. You know, you're dead on the fact that there were a lot of questioning
because here's in my mind, you know, mm-hmm. just like if you brought up Nicaragua, I think genocidal dictators. No, I think Noriega, I think drugs. I think it's changed quite a bit.
Stereotypes.
Right. Yeah. There's just the tourism bureau isn't always working overtime in the positive side. So when I think of Amsterdam, I think of liberal, like, drug laws, right? I think of that. I think of, you hear these stories, and I've never been. Of course, I've seen Harold and Kumar, so I saw it.
Me too, so I know what you're saying right.
You think of, like, windows with ladies standing in them, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Everyone on bicycles, mm-hmm. and just generally friendly people, maybe some good food. Like, does it fit into any of those categories?
It fits into all those categories, in fact. And no, it wasn't my original idea that the hotel that I stayed at was only two blocks away from the red light district. That was wasn't in the cards. I didn't know that.
But
before
as a journalist,
went.
But it worked out pretty well, didn't it?
But if you think about this, like, as someone who's heard of it, and as a guy that works in the world of media, in the world mm-hmm. of news, you're almost obligated to just kind of check it out, just even from
fact finding.
Can talk about it. Like you said, you got a story.
Yeah, exactly. And there is a stigma with a lot of these places in Amsterdam, and a lot of people like came back and they said, "Weren't you worried about this? Weren't you worried about like walking on the street alone by yourself?" And I'm thinking to myself, we live in Chicago. I mean, what are they saying about us at the moment? So I was totally open to going to all the experiences. I think I went to every single museum that there was there. And the other thing was I traveled alone. So I wanted to go and experience it the best that I could. And sometimes going by yourself to these kind of places around the world is the best way to experience it.
What are the things that you have to kind of take into consideration is one thing, and it isn't for everybody. Traveling by themselves isn't necessarily for everybody. But if you're going to give yourself a gift, or when people say, what can I give you? And you always want to say, like, oh, okay, give me something practical or something I really want. And you could say, like, send me here.
Yeah.
And I think there's got to be some benefits to traveling alone, because you get to do exactly what you're hoping to do and see. And then maybe let kind of the experience take on a life of its own, as opposed to having it be like, well, we know we have to go here today.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. There's nobody holding you back. And it's like, oh, no, I don't want to walk this far. Or no, can we take an Uber here? It's so great. And especially now in the world that we live in with social media, it's not like I'm going by myself anymore, because I come back and everyone goes, oh, yeah, how was your trip? I already know. Yeah, I saw you on
my bridge.
It's old
news. Don't tell me that story.
Yeah. I mean, it has changed. So it's so weird that you say that, Mike, because it has changed so much that you can sort of travel by yourself, but with whether it's FaceTime, mm-hmm. whether it's just everybody else. I mean, because I know enough about it just off of Facebook to be able to talk with you a little bit about it. So you don't feel like really you're isolated, because you're really not. Everybody in the whole world, all your friends back here, know what's going on.
Right.
Exactly. And there was not a single time when I felt alone, because before, maybe even 3 years ago, when I would go to, I spent a few months in Costa Rica and I lived by myself, when Google Maps didn't really exist. And I was able to find every single place I needed to go to. I was speaking to my mom on FaceTime. I was writing my friends postcards. I was constantly on Facebook looking at, I wasn't constantly on Facebook. I kind of, I was on vacation.
That was a great vacation. What'd you do? Yeah. I was on Facebook the whole time.
I was there. Never had time to leave the room.
Never. Yeah, that's right.
But it's a really cool experience, and that would be my gift that I would give somebody is where do you want to go? What stories can you build from this Christmas gift rather than here's the newest Furby?
Yeah, I think either or and. You need that Furby. The one thing that I thought was really interesting too, though, is that when people say, "Hey, were you afraid?" Mm-hmm. and then you think to yourself, you know, I'm from Chicago. Yeah. You know, I mean, they should, they're probably
I can walk the streets of Chicago. I can walk the streets pretty much anywhere.
They're more afraid of me than them. We're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back. Then we're going to send it to news. When we come back talking about Chicago and the streets of Chicago, making it safer than it has been ever before and working towards that great relationship with the citizens as well as the police, the crisis intervention team. Will talk with Officer Sanchez. Quick break. Come back. News. Dane in for Patty here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN live here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez, Dane Neal in studio until 2 a.m. with you. We do have Dino Tiberi to my right. Yes.
That would be me.
Radio down. Mike Heideman in the booth as well. You know him, you love him, you're used to him as well. In studio with us, excited to talk about this. As you look towards, I think all of us, as we get towards the end of the year, you think of, you know, going into 2018, we want to have all of our relationships be a little bit better, a little bit warmer, a little bit more productive. And in Chicago Police Department, they are no exception. So in studio, we have Officer Kate Sanchez and Officer Mark Busick, and they have started a new thing called and working on the Crisis Intervention Team. So guys, welcome to WGN.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about the inspiration for it. You know, and I think we did a little bit early on in the program. We were kind of previewing what it is that you guys were doing, is that officers in so many different situations, you are thrown into a lot of either whether it's personal relationships or crisis, and it may not be the kind of things that you're always, you know, training for at the academy, right? It isn't necessarily just run-of-the-mill, you know, good guy, bad guy, cops things. A lot of that community interaction isn't necessarily stuff that you get trained for. So, you know, if you want to, Mark, if you want to talk about it, Officer Buslick, a little bit about the inspiration, why you decided, you know, what made it seem like this was something that we need, and let's get working on it.
Sure. The crisis intervention program here in Chicago actually goes back to about 2004. It's based on a model from the Memphis Police Department, and it's been replicated not only here in Chicago but across the country, and it's pretty much a best practices for intervening when a person is mentally ill or in a crisis. We have currently in Chicago about 2,000 of our field officers have been trained, which is close to the best practices of about 35% of field officers. That's a recommendation of the Mayor's Police Accountability Task Force, as well as the International Association of Chiefs of Police. So that's our target, about 35% of the officers at any one time on the street. The 19th District, where I'm the commander, we're a little bit less than that, which is about right across the city in all 22 districts. Some districts a little bit more, some a little bit less. What we wound up doing when I became the commander in 19, about a year ago, was looking at how much of our response in the field is spent with persons who are mentally ill or experiencing some kind of crisis. And what Kate really discovered was that we lead the city in the 19th District. And there are a variety of reasons for that. One being Uptown with its historical growth in services and people who wound up living in Uptown. So Kate had started a program while she was finishing up graduate school looking at how the police respond to people in crisis. And I asked Kate, who had come with me after we completed work as the department's liaison to the Department of Justice during their civil rights investigation, to look at how we're responding in the 19th District. And as a result, Kate really sort of created an extension of the CIT program on a little bit higher scale. Something we're calling a mental health resource officer to coordinate what our CIT officers are doing in the field, and really try to provide another layer of service so that we could keep the community safer. We could connect people with services that they needed. We could reduce the demand on the police from what we call chronic consumers, because the police department were often the first and sometimes the only service provider. And that's where we are today. And, you know, Kate can certainly explain the details of what that MHRO is and how she's able to provide those services.
Well, Kate, I wanted to ask you, too, because and you're hearing more and more about it, and I don't know if it's the kind of thing that we're just in a better position to identify it now, or if it's changed, and we really do have a lot more people that are dealing with mental illness that are out there on the street and kind of finding themselves in these situations. We know we've heard, and we've had guests on the station that said that even in some of our jails, whether it's the county jail, that it's like a good percentage of the people, you know, really aren't necessarily, as you would kind of label them, criminals. They have more of kind of a mental health issue that the county is dealing with. So from your perspective, as someone who had to kind of build this element into it, are there more people dealing with it now, or are we just in a better position to not only identify it, but kind of start dealing with it through the program?
That's a good question. I think it's kind of a combination of a lot of things. Back in the 70s and the 80s, we had this deinstitutionalization where local government or local agencies it was thought that they would take the responsibility of providing services to people in the community. It didn't really fully expand to what I think the original idea was. And we've just seen an increase from that in the number of interactions, first responders, and that's fire and police and EMS. It's continued to grow the number of incidents that we encounter with people in crisis. And with that, you know, we've got this great training program. We have officers that are trained. It's a voluntary 40-hour training, the crisis intervention team. And, you know, could we take this further and try to connect the people that we see on a frequent basis, what we've referred to, Commander mentioned earlier, the chronic consumer. Could we refer them to local services? What's available in the community? What's close by? You know, what agency offers what service? That's kind of what this position evolved from or is evolving into, is a connection on a local basis.
It's kind of neat because you're seeing the ability to kind of identify, because you are the eyes and ears that are out there in the community. And if you see an individual that you realize that this is someone that you're going to run into on a regular basis, but now that you're armed with some of these tools, not only to identify it, but then to refer them to places where you can kind of mitigate future interactions, right?
And many of the people that we interact with, jail's not an option. It's not the best option because, you know,
but as a police officer, it may not be, you know, a tool that you have to use, right? You only have so many things, you know, as far as, you know, that you can suggest or kind of implement outside of what you're doing now with the intervention team.
Right. And many of the people, the chronic consumers, it's very low level crimes. I mean, going to jail's not the best answer. So we're trying to intercept people and you know, divert them out of the criminal justice system into services so that, you know, as the commander mentioned, we reduce the amount of repeat services to the same people, the chronic consumer. We keep the public safe. We keep the individuals safe. You know, we're trying to reduce the amount of offenders at the same time as victims. So it's really looking at it at a very local level and finding out what's available in the community and utilizing those resources.
And Commander, you know, you try to arm your people with all the tools that they need to handle every situation. You know, how often has that happened, or have you gotten a lot of feedback, you know, from people that have been involved in the new program where there were situations, you know, a lot of times it's a split second, right? What are you going to do? What you're not going to do? Where they felt like really empowered and armed with useful tools to deal with those situations.
Sure. That's absolutely right. And one of the things I'd like to point out is that it's not just CIT training that we're providing our officers with, every police officer, superintendent on down, has or will be attending a 16-hour course in force mitigation and de-escalation, which includes a component of really what I'm calling mental health first aid, so that officers can recognize, hopefully pretty quickly, hey, this is actually a person in crisis. It's not that situation that I have to react in a split second. I can back out of this apartment, give it some time. Let's see what we can do, keeping in mind that our really primary tenet is the sanctity of life, that there are times when we don't have to react immediately. And we're trying to take advantage of that natural skill of the police officer to make decisions, make quick decisions, and then be able to determine the best course of action. So we're trying, as you mentioned, toolbox, it's a terrific analogy. We're trying to provide more tools for the police officer so that, you know, we're talking about arrest, so that arrest is not the only thing. So that, you know, running somebody over to the hospital right away isn't the only thing that we can do. So we're trying to expand these options.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back from the break. Some of the different options that are there, some of the ways that that the officers have been integrated into the program, what the program looks like. Plus, I'd love to hear a little bit about that whole best practices thing, too, how law enforcement officials from around the country get in. Like, here's what we're doing. Maybe this is something to try, and how different cities kind of integrate that into what they're doing. Quick break here. We're going to get back with Officer Kate Sanchez and Commander Mark Buslick when we get back from Chicago Police Department. It's Dane. In for Patty here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN live here, Allstate Showcase Studio. Dane here until 2 in for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. And in studio with us, Dino Tiberius to my right, Mike Heidemann in the booth as well. And we have been talking with the Chicago Police Department's Crisis Intervention Team. And in studio, we have Officer Kate Sanchez and Commander Mark Buslick. Guys, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So here's the interesting thing, and I love these kind of situations where people see a need out there, they see things that can be improved, but it always takes an individual or a couple individuals to get together to make things happen. Oftentimes it'll start with a sort of a pilot program kind of thing. We're going to do this. The commander had mentioned in the 19th District, you know, maybe more of a need there, or at least more candidates, you know, in order to kind of test out things. But when it came to putting this thing together, it's always good to get kind of input from people that are doing the same thing in other places that can give you a little bit of advice and use the word best practices, and that's it. So, Kate, talk a little bit about kind of that process. You knew you wanted to do something. You wanted to build a program. You wanted to be right from the get-go. So you did all that research and talked to people around the country.
I did. I was fortunate enough during the time that I was with the Department of Justice Liaison Unit, I was able to use that time to talk to other agencies throughout the country and representatives there. I spoke with Houston Police Department, LA PD, Seattle, Portland, Toronto, Canada. And ironically enough, what really struck me as a pretty successful program that probably could be implemented in a timely fashion was the Madison Police Department, and they have a mental health liaison officer. And I spent many hours speaking with Sergeant Eugene Worley from MPD. It was very, very wonderful and sharing information. You know, I also looked at everything from their reports and statistics and read many, many articles and really put everything, like little things from every department, what was successful, and put it together into the mental health resource officer.
Did you knew that what you kind of wanted to accomplish, right? You know, that's the reason that you embarked on the project. But were there things that came out of the blue that you're like, oh, wow, I never really thought of that? Or that's an interesting way to do it. You know, because sometimes it isn't just like, I know what I want to do, tell me how to do it. Sometimes you get some kind of epiphany out of left field.
Yes, thanks for asking that. Well, originally it was like, I want to help people get connected to local services. And that kind of was my initial thought. And then really what's developed out of this is three main topics or main subjects. And one of those is the community interaction, which of course is important. We just had a meeting at the 19th District with all the service providers in the area, and we went over our policies and procedures for responding to people in mental crisis, and many of the agencies were not aware of that. We went over some state law, you know, regarding people with mental illness and in mental crisis. And so the community outreach is so important, and I've really been working hard on developing that. And at the same time, there's more of the administrative aspects. I've been keeping track of data from the beginning of this year. I read every report that comes in. So it's more of that administrative level. And then the third that is what I'm so excited about is the resource for the CIT and non-CIT trained officers, but within the district. And when they have questions, I can try and get the answers for them. And one of the things with responding to people with in crisis is that you're never going to have a cookie cutter response. You're never going to have the same incident, even with the same person day to day. Yeah, it really can change. And so a lot of things come up, a lot of issues and questions. And I've been able to contact like our main CIT unit and ask those questions and help the officers get answers.
It seems like the kind of thing that would be, I don't want to say a no-brainer, but it seems like the kind of thing that everybody would agree, wow, this is something that I think is necessary that people could benefit from. But a lot of times, some of the easiest things out there, you know, are the hardest to implement, especially when you've got a giant organization with a lot of people. So, Commander, I wanted to ask you, you're in the 19th district, and so have you had, like, other commanders or other districts? I mean, they all probably say, like, this is something we want, kind of itching to, like, hey, let's try to expand this. How are you dealing with it?
Sure. That in fact, is correct. We do have interest from other districts. There are a couple things that are worth noting. Number one, this is really part of a much bigger mindset. Superintendent Eddie Johnson really challenged the command staff with the notion of not just looking at reform. Because reform really just means fixing what's broken. And there are things that are broken and need to be fixed. But transformation, and that's kind of our motto, not just reform, but transformation. Think about where we want to be in a year or 3 years or 5 or 20 years. And what are the kinds of things that we should be doing now to get to that point? So in doing that, we've been working really as a partnership, starting with the mayor's office, who his office put together a task force of all the different agencies, police, fire, Office of Emergency Management and Communications, the Department of Public Health, the law department, as well as some outside resources, NAMI, the Kennedy Forum. All these different resources to look at that goal of transformation. Where do we want to be? We don't want to just fix things that we may have identified as broken, but where do we want to be? And in doing so, yes, it's bringing in people who can help us. We have UIC is now helping us evaluate our sort of micro effort in 19. To identify what are the things that we're doing right, what things should be changed, what are appropriate metrics to determine are we doing anything right here. So, yeah, it is a much bigger thing than just our little interests.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is you're taking some of the, you know, kind of cherry picking some of the really good things that work in other places, combining them, kind of mixing it up with a lot of the thought process that was the genesis for it, and then coming up with something, like you said, that's transformative, that is something right. Totally different and totally perfect for Chicago. Now, do you have it? Just as it's been a great resource for you to talk to these other people, and like Officer Sanchez, did you have some of these other? Because I think it's a great resource for them to talk with the Chicago Police Department. Did they have like, hey, we'll help you with this, but what about this other thing that maybe we're dealing with?
I Actually, not really. I'm surprised. Well, that they
that's something that's going to be coming later.
I think we're uncomfortable at this point because we don't know. We don't know what's working, what's not working yet. We will get to that point. And then, yeah, we're going to let the world know about it.
And then maybe we'll have other departments calling you guys for the best practice on this thing. We're going to take a break and we send it to news. But before we let you go, of course, we're talking with Commander Mark Buslick and Officer Kate Sanchez from Chicago Police Department. Let us know where we can where people can get some extra information, maybe learn a little bit about it, or just kind of stay tuned for some of the things happening.
Well, I think the easiest thing to do is Google Crisis Intervention Team. There'll be plenty of resources about how police departments are doing it. Like I said, it's a best practices model, so it should be easy enough to find. If a caller to 911 feels that they need this resource for this particular incident, let that call taker know. The call takers and dispatchers have been provided training by OEMC, so they will be able to handle that call and make sure that an appropriate officer is dispatched.
That is important advice, especially to let people know that this is an option coming as it expands around Chicago. So, guys, thanks so much for what you're doing.
Thank you for being in
WGN today. Quick break. We'll come back and send it to news. It is Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN live here, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. The festive music is...
Christmas is coming.
It's
There's
all
no,
around us.
No
right?
way around it. That's right.
Yeah. You know, and what goes best, Dino, with festive music? It's just festive libations.
Yeah.
And if you can build a market in there somewhere, then I think you've got all those bases covered. Maybe some presents and then maybe a trip to Amsterdam. I know we're asking for a lot, but hey, you know what? We're going to try to make it the best that we can. In studio with us, and this is it. Chicago has so many great... events and so many great ways for everybody to kind of celebrate the holidays and Christmas and all those kind of things. We're going to talk about the market coming up after the break, you know, with Dovetail as well. But excited to have Häagen-Dazs in studio. He's the brewer owner for Dovetail Brewery. And, you know, I've always contended, whether it's like fighter pilot, race car driver, barbecue pitmaster is really right up there too, but also like craft brewery owner is like one of the coolest things you can have on your business card. So Häagen, welcome to WGN.
Thanks very much. I agree with you 100%. I always tell people it's better than working.
You know,
there you go.
You are one of the reasons that Chicago has become a tastier and more delicious place every single year, as Chicago has become now the second highest as far as per capita breweries, I think, to Portland. I think Portland is still number one, at least at this point, but more and more, and Dovetail is there. So let's talk a little bit about the genesis of the situation, you know, and your story, you know, so that you can inspire the next generation. People can follow in your footsteps. There's probably an 11-year-old kid listening by the radio, sneaking in there saying, I want to have a
I want my own beer.
Yes, that's what he should be saying. What is beer? But and why does it deserve so much praise? But so how did it start for you? What you thought Dovetail, and then boom, you did it.
No, this started a long time ago. For me personally, it started about 20 years ago when I was a home winemaker. But I gradually got into Belgian style beers, and the more I learned about beer, the deeper and deeper my love for beer became. And I eventually ended up at beer school, where I met my business partner, Bill Wesselink, and that was actually in Munich, Germany. And,
what a better place
to travel abroad.
To learn.
You know, being a foreign exchange student at beer school in Munich, Germany sounds like the way to go.
It's quite a wonderful experience. It was my favorite school ever.
Oh man, no doubt about it.
Was this young enough where you could get your parents to kick in for this? Like, Dad, I found my calling. No, okay.
No, actually, I was an engineer for 20 years, and I decided to do something different, and I just kind of slowly took classes year after year. Took my vacation to take professional level brewing classes, and also just kind of figured out on the side how to write a business plan, run a business. And
I mean, it's a lot more than just liking beer, because we've got a lot of people out that are probably listening. They're writing down everything that you're saying, and they know they have the I like beer or I enjoy Dovetail Brewery beer, or I love craft beer. But taking it from point A to point Z, you know, to the point where not only you have your own place, but the business side of it, is a completely different situation. The craft brewing world has changed so much. You know, when I was a kid, I know that we had relatives that would brew their own beer and they would bring it. And typically, when I was an older kid, a kid that was legally able to imbibe, you know, it just wasn't that good, right? You know, where people got to the point where they, now I think with information, there's a lot of tools out there. And I think just the world of having, you know, more people into it, have allowed more people to get into it and kind of achieve kind of higher levels as far as the beer that they were making. But there's got to be that point, just like grandma, he makes these great cookies and someone says, grandma, you got to sell these. So Hagen, was that it? You know, at some point you were making beer that was like, wow, you know, this is more than I shouldn't just keep this all to myself, is what I'm trying to say.
It was more like, you know, I would rather spend all day, every day doing something I'm absolutely passionate about. And, you know, yes, after a while, you know, my own beer making ability got better and better, especially taking classes. But it was more about doing that thing I love every day.
When you say taking classes, how long or how long of a time period were you taking in beer school? Was it so just in bits and pieces you were going? You were saying, or
yep. The course that we went to was a partnership between a school here in Chicago called the Siebel Institute, which is the oldest brewing school in the U.S., wow. And a school in Germany called the Damen's Academy. And they, together, they have a program called the World Brewing Academy. And if you were to go straight through, you'd do 9 to 5 every day for about 7 months, 7-8 months. And it's a very intense course. It's not meant for the newbie. It's, you know, you gotta have a certain amount of experience, science background for sure, or brewing background. It lets you reach a depth of knowledge that you otherwise couldn't get.
And be able to really kind of just realize it and create the physical embodiment of what it is that you're hoping to achieve. On the brewing side, you know, a million years ago, I had an interview with Keith Villa, of course, from Blue Moon, and you know, and I kind of equated sort of the beer world to, you know, kind of the music world, Dino. You know, how right. many you're gonna gotta write a hit, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you've got here with the Holiday Box. So let's talk a little bit about the beer that we have in front of us. You're proud of it. It's great.
All right. So, at Dovetail, what we do is continental European style beers, traditional methods. So this Holiday Bock, it's a German style holiday or Christmas Bock. We brewed it in July just to release around the holidays. We released it just the day before Thanksgiving, and it's kind of this deep amber lager. It's a winter warmer, so it's 7.6%. It's got nice caramel tones to it. But because of that long, you know, 4 to 5 month maturation period, it's really smooth and just easy to drink. It's a kind of a deceptively.
I was gonna say it's a little scary smooth. After having a sip of it. I mean,
we've got to make sense for another couple hours here. So,
they're on their fifth one, ladies
yeah,
and gentlemen.
Hey, what the heck just happened?
No. This is journalistic purposes.
We've got to
test the things. We've got to taste it so we can recommend it for the people. The other thing that's going on is it's one thing when you've got a cool situation, you've got a great beer. We're going to talk a little bit about when we come back from the break about the brewery itself, the loft house that you have, and then, of course, this holiday market coming up where you've got an event. There's always an occasion. You know how when it's your birthday, it's time to go ahead and get that cake, blow out those candles, maybe have those, you know, the Bloody Marys that you've been talking about.
Oh, absolutely right.
So when the holiday time comes, it's time to have a market. There's a good reason. I don't want to say excuse. I want to say good reason.
A reason.
Yeah, to get out there and celebrate. So we're going to talk about the holiday market coming up on December 16th. We come back from the break as well. So we've got Häagen-Dazs. He is here with Dovetail Brewery. It is Dane in for Patty on 720 WGN. 720 WGN live here, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Dane here until 2. We do have Dino Tiberi to my right. And in studio, we've got Häagen-Dazs. He is the brewer, owner, the mastermind, the visionary with his hand on the pulse of all things Dovetail Brewery. Hagen, welcome back to WGN.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
So it's good to have you in studio, and we were able to get you to bring some of the great stuff that you're doing, specifically the Holiday Bock. But let's talk a little bit about the facility. The other dream, you know, when you get to do what you want to do on a regular basis, create some great stuff, make people happy. It's cool to have that brewery, a tap room, you know, kind of command central, kind of the beer lair, and you've got that for Dovetail.
We do. It's kind of like having your own big basement. You know, we got a bar. We got a good brewing system. No, but it's so it's up there at we're at 1800 West Bell Plain at Bell Plain and Ravenswood, right in the North Center neighborhood. And it is it's a 22,000 square foot facility with a tap room. Yeah,
that's quite a basement.
22,000.
It's a big basement.
That's many basements. So okay, so when you're trying to build this, and it's you know, for those people out that are living vicariously through us all right now, and they think to themselves, you know, the ultimate man cave would be to have your own brewery, right? Ideally, a successful one. And then you're down there. It's like 22,000 square feet. So what is it? Like, what is in there?
It is a brew house, which is where we make the wort for the that gets fermented into the beer. It is it is two fermentation areas. So we do continental European style traditional methods, and one of those traditional methods is open fermentation. So we have these fermenters that are kind of open to the atmosphere, and we feel that helps the yeast produce the best possible beer. And you'd find that in kind of these little family run breweries in the middle of Bavaria, let's say, people still doing things that way. And then we've got these lager tanks, which are these kind of, if you look on our website, dovetailbrewery.com, we've got these horizontal yellow tanks, and that's where we mature the beer. So lager is a German word for cellar or storage. Traditionally you would store the beer in caves underneath a brewery for, you know, weeks and weeks and until it was ready. So,
or you could store them in your 22,000 square foot basement.
You could. In a nice cold yellow tank that lets the flavors just kind of marry and marry out and become gentle and drinkable.
Yeah, and now brewing has become, and the way that you're describing it too, sort of like a spectator sport, right? People are getting down there, they want to see the stuff.
Yep.
They want to see it all kind of happening in action, and it is the kind of thing, you know, people that love brewing craft beer and that love just that whole scenario, whether you're just a fan of it or whether you're kind of in on the process to whatever level, people love to talk about it. Do you have, like, people find out who you are, they're kind of bent in your ear, you know, they want to tell you what they're doing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or they want to, like, get maybe some advice on, like, hey, what do you do when this happens? Do you find yourself kind of tapped?
Absolutely.
For that?
So we give tours every Saturday.
Do you do the tours yourself, like the whole if you look to your left kind of thing?
I do the tours myself.
Nice.
I have some help these days too, which is nice, but I try to do as many tours as I can. And you know, we often get home brewers or brewers from other breweries, you know, coming through. And what Bill and I always say is and this we learned this in beer school, we say that there are no secrets in the brew house. So
it's not like what happens at Dovetail stays at Dovetail.
Nope.
This is like, okay.
Nope. We will tell anybody anything that they want to know. Anything that we do can be learned on your own or read in a book. And if I told somebody else, you know, our exact recipe, they could go and make it and they'd still have their own beer. It wouldn't be our beer, it would be their beer, and it would have their own thumbprint on it. It's just inevitable.
It's very generous.
That's what craft brewing is, you know.
See, I wish Colonel Sanders was that generous because, you know, we've never cracked that code. I haven't, with 11 herbs and spices, you know, but here we've got the opportunity to go ahead and, you know, I mean, the no secrets. Here's the thing, too. I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but for the tour, does it end at the gift shop? Because typically that's the way that they do it. It seems to work out.
That is the problem. It doesn't end at the gift shop.
Well, a lot of people
have a T-shirt stand.
I was going to say, right? Or some of the great glasses here for Dovetail. Let the listeners know we're talking with Hagen Dose. He's the brewer owner over there at Dovetail Brewery, and we talked about it. You have to have kind of a mecca, a place for people to go, and we know that is 1800 West Bell Plain in North Ravenswood. That is the place that you can go. 22,000 square feet of action-packed fun for Dovetail. And now, when you think action-packed fun, you got to have a party, right? And so you've got this holiday market. It is coming up on the 16th. So this is what, this next Saturday?
This next Saturday from 12 to 7.
Talk about it. This is the second annual, so it must have gone well enough where you decided, let's do it again.
It went great last year. So what we do is we bring in somewhere between 13 and 15 local vendors, local artisans, and we set them up in our barrel loft. So a lot of our brewing is dedicated to barrel aging, but we've got some space available. So they come in, they set up, we set up a little bar, and we get a food truck out there, and you can actually shop. You can shop indoors and get some really unique gifts for people for the holidays. And that's, I think that's what was really nice about it. Like we could find these local people that really talented artisans and offer their wares somewhere that was also kind of unique.
Can you give a couple examples of the type of things? Are they all? They don't all have to be even like beer related, right? These are just kind of cool holiday things that you've sort of curated. Hey, this is a great artisan. This is a cool product. This is something we want to have. Because, and Dino, here's what I'm thinking. If you ever needed an excuse, and I would, right, to say like, I need to spend a lot of time at Dovetail. If it's under the, I don't want to say the guise, right, but under the umbrella of, finding the perfect gift for loved ones, I think that this is a great idea.
Well, I just checked out the website, and I think I'm going to be making a stop upcoming here to see what they've got, because it's a lot of good stuff out there.
So do you have a couple that you want to mention?
So we've got is it Chicago Leather and Wood?
It's one of them. I'm not quizzing you, but
leather products, cutting boards, great stuff. We've also got 1,000 Words. She does greeting cards and posters. There are a few others there. Ask me about
like a photography. There's a Remoto photography using a Polaroid SX70, digital infrared photography. That sounds pretty cool.
Fantastic stuff.
And then the Sunday Crochet Company. So that's the thing. You know, my brother-in-law has learned. I don't know how he did this, because I would never thought they would have the aptitude to, I don't know. Maybe I think it's just a mysterious.
Crochet.
Yeah, and he's great at it. He's making hats and scarves.
I was gonna say, get some old beer can. My mom used to make those back in the 70s.
And this is the kind of thing that I love, and you just don't find it at the maybe Bed Bath and Beyond, maybe, but is you've got the soap artisans. You know, it is. I'm trying to read this thing that they've got here. It's like Harvey Brown. Is that it? No, Abby Brown. Sorry,
Close enough.
Abby Brown, no relation, of course. Abby Brown, soap artisan. So natural olive oil soap, soothing body oils, relaxing bathing essentials, and homey candles.
So this is a one-stop shop, then.
It's basically
get your beer and get many other things.
Yep. Another one I want to point out, We Are Lions. They do work with people with disabilities. So they'll take artwork made by these people and you know, create posters or T-shirts, other articles.
Yeah.
Articles of clothing.
See, there's like a higher purpose.
Fantastic. Absolutely. Fantastic group.
Community support angle, We Are Alliance, and what they do is individuals with disabilities through art and entrepreneurship, offering the entrepreneurs 50% of the profits, and allows them to showcase at great events like this. So last thing, give the website for Dovetail. I know you did, but also a little bit of that information so people can get out and see you on the 16th.
Dovetailbrewery.com. December 16th, this coming Saturday, 12 to 7 p.m., holiday market. Come out and see us at the 1800 West Bell Plain. We're about a two-minute walk from the Irving Park Brown Line. Come enjoy some beers and some nice holiday shopping.
Haagen-Dazs, Dovetail Brewery. Good. Get out there, see them all year round, but specifically on the 16th. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we are going to send it to news. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN live here, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Dane here until 2 a.m. with you. Dino Tiberi to my right, Mike Heideman in the booth and in studio. Honored to have as we get in there and try to figure out the best ways to enjoy, celebrate, to embrace the holidays. Dino is, you know, through events, right? Not only events, but decorations, the accoutrements, libations.
Yeah, your holiday parties and different things that are going on with whether it's through work or whether it's your family. And
Well, you're just getting, yeah, okay. And I'm getting all sensitive.
Things like we're getting ready to talk about right now.
Or the perfect cocktail that says Holidays in studio with us. We've got Freddie Sarkis and Brandon Volpita. Guys, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having us. How are you doing?
So you guys are with Brando Speakeasy, and so you guys are doing stuff on a regular basis, 365 all the time, right? But during the holidays, this is kind of this thing that's going on 50 different cities all around the country. Chicago's, of course, included in this. It's Miracle. So it's kind of like a pop-up. We hear about chefs with pop-up restaurants or holiday. This is like a pop-up holiday cocktail experience, right?
Yeah, Freddie is a cocktail chef. So we've got going on.
I love it.
Way I describe myself, but
it's a decent way. Yeah, Miracle is a it's curated by Greg with Cocktail Kingdom, and they've been doing it for how many years, Freddie?
I think this is our third year.
Yeah, so they have 55 locations worldwide.
55 locations worldwide. Chicago is one of them.
Yes, it is, and we are along with another bar in the city. We're one of them. So we were chosen with Greg this year, and we should be doing it for the next couple of years also.
Nice. So how does it work? I mean, so when people come in, and there are some places that kind of give you that vibe. You walk in the door, and you're like, wow, geez, you know, this feels like Christmas. Just like so you go to some people's houses, and it's like, oh, my gosh, it's so Christmassy. So how do you – but they've got kind of a system here, right, where they don't leave anything to chance. They've got it down.
Very, very easy, self-explanatory. They give you – the menus, they create the drinks. It's up to us to create the drinks, to make the batches and the syrups and all that kind of stuff. It's all done in-house by Freddie and myself. But yeah, they give you a very, very detailed manual, and it's up to us to design the place, which is curated by my father, Dino, Dino.
Great wow. name.
All the Dinos, right? The world unite.
Oh, yeah, Dino. Right. Yeah, but no, he designed it along with me and Freddie, and we just plugged the drinks in, and we went forward.
Before
it's like
we get...
Santa threw up.
In the best
in a
possible.
Very good way.
In a
way,
very right. good way, right.
Santa, anything with Santa can't be done.
Santa threw up because he had such a great time.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's a very good point.
And he would do it again. We're going to get into the drinks with Freddie in just a second, but when it comes to the decor, you think about lights, right? I guess that would be it, maybe some ornaments or things like that. What do you guys have? What's your dad put together?
We have lights. We have garland. We have different ribbons all over the place. We have sequins along the bar. Our chandeliers are made into little Christmas trees, actually. A very cool thing about the bar that it's in, it's our cocktail lounge. So it's a 1920s style mixology lounge.
Nice.
And the cool thing is we have two TVs that play very old school videos and different things from the era. And it's a rotating sequence of different videos. And for Christmas, for the pop-up, we actually did a Christmas version of that. So we have the Eddie or the Jobo, the old WGN characters, if you know what I'm talking about, like that. We're along with Bozo and different old Frosty videos and all that kind of stuff.
Stuff like from Ray Rayner. And
yes, exactly.
The
there you go.
Hard Rock, Coco, and Joe.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah. There you go.
Not Eddie and Jobo.
Not Eddie and Jobo.
Although Eddie would probably appreciate
sure
that.
Sure, they did a Christmas special. I'm sure at some point. All right, so you've got the decor there. So you get in there, you're going to feel it, the ambiance. You've taken care of it. And before we got, you know, when we first did kind of a preview of the different people we're going to be highlighting today, you know, we talked about, okay, what is a drink? What is a cocktail that says Christmas? And you think to yourself, okay, maybe something cocoa with some brandy in it, or, you know, maybe a hot toddy, some of those things. But you guys have it down. So, Freddie, give us kind of the rundown of some of the ways that people can enjoy some of these beverages and have like a real holiday cocktail.
Well, we're really fortunate, like we said, to be paired with the Cocktail Kingdom people. And they put together a really great list for us. And so we're just executing on our end. I actually brought a couple today. I wasn't sure if you guys were thirsty or not.
We are. Sure.
Always.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
Right? I'll pass them over.
So I was hoping to start you guys off. This is the Jingle Ball Nog.
Oh, wow. And so you guys have, and I don't know if this is this just for here, or do you guys have some of these like,
absolutely.
Special?
Yeah, we've got, again, it's even the glassware has been taken care of.
Oh, my.
We've got all that. There. It's actually available for sale as well. If people want to take them home, they think they're kind of cute.
Very little Christmas gifts last minute.
The eggnog is great. We make it fresh in-house, done with a little bit of pandan paste, which is an Asian ingredient. It's sometimes called screw pine. It's actually what gives it that green color. I know you're thinking it's more like green eggs, but
well, I was thinking more kind of like mint, you know, mint looking, you know. Anyway,
yeah, it's a unique
tastes
take.
Really good,
it sort of looks like a shamrock shake.
Yeah, kind of actually. That's a plug for McDonald's.
Nothing wrong with the shamrock. That's cool. That's old school right there.
We're talking about.
Yeah, it's a good change on a traditional eggnog.
Right.
And then what do you have on top of it? Is that
it's a little bit of
nutmeg?
Fresh grated nutmeg.
Okay, gotcha.
Just to give it some kind of aromatics.
So you've got, and so that, yeah, that's an obvious one, yeah. Right? The egg. Of course, this is an elevated spin on it. So you guys are doing some things pretty well. And then also you have some kind of, you know, regular drinks that we know and love, but you've got sort of a Christmas take on it, like a Christmopolitan. I'm guessing actually, that's a Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, Christmas it's a yeah, it's a cranberry version of a Cosmopolitan.
I'm
going
to shake one up here so it, I don't know.
I love the names on here. Really well this on radio. Is, there's some great names on this cocktail list.
The Mule Tide.
Yeah, they did very well with their marketing.
How the Gimlet Stole Christmas.
I love that drink. We had to go to a friend's house and harvest pine needles off a tree for that one. Oh,
see?
You'll shoot your rye out right out of Christmas Story.
Fresh pine needles, definitely. Now, the Cosmopolitan's a take on, obviously, the traditional Cosmopolitan. It's a vodka, elderflower liqueur, dry vermouth, spiced cranberry sauce, which is phenomenal. It's house made. It's very good, created by Freddie, like almost everything on the list. It's got a fresh rosemary and then lime and an absinthe mist along the glass.
Wow. Oh. And it looks good, too. We got to get some pictures of these, too. We're going to put them up at WGNRadio.com as well, because people are getting in there. They're able to enjoy the miracle holiday cocktail experience. Right now, and through is it through the end of Christmas? The end
we're
of almost
run
to New Year's.
A little bit longer. I think we might run it right up until New Year's Eve.
Yeah, so we're gonna run it right. Yeah, till November or December 30th. So you will have a lot of time in December before your Christmas festivities to stop by and take a look.
Yeah, a couple more weeks.
So there's a bunch of these now. Is the place, is Brando's completely set up for this the entire time, or is it like after five you guys flip a switch and transform it?
We actually have two sides. So Brando's Speakeasy is the original. We've been there for 10 years, and that's our karaoke side. The Miracle on Dearborn Street is actually on our S&S room side, and that is the 1920 style mixology lounge. And that was kind of the best course of action because it already has those elevated drinks and the elevated spirits, and we kind of that whole room is decked out the whole month of December. So anytime you're at Brando's, you're in Christmasville if you step over onto the other side.
That's nice. Yeah. And great in Christmasville. So when we come back, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Freddie and Brandon. They're going to be in studio with us again for the next segment. We're going to talk about some of the things that they're doing at Brando's in general. We'll get back to a little bit of some of the miracle cocktail experience that they're doing for the holidays. We're also going to get into the ugly sweater party and toy drive. So just as there's a higher purpose for things, helping out the community. That's ugly right. Sweaters. Do you have an ugly sweater?
I do. Gifts. Awful. I actually have pictures of a couple of them. I haven't worn them since I initially put them on. But
they're making some really cool sweaters now. Where I've seen one where like Santa's riding a shark, or there's, you know, if you look closely, maybe it looks to the untrained eye. It appears to be a typical Christmas sweater, but perhaps the Rangers are doing something, you know, naughty or something. You know,
I don't have any of those, but
I wore one on a Saturday that I got a lot of comments for. Can't be seven in the air.
Well, there you go. Oh, yeah, must have been what you were just talking
about. It's a family show, right? But exactly. But it looks, you know, the Christmas sweater has a certain look. I think it's labeled ugly, but really it is kind of traditional and festive. And now, Mike, in the booth. Now, you're a sweater guy. Not everybody's a sweater guy, but you really enjoy sweaters. Do you have any actual Christmas sweaters? It's true. If you know Mike, you know he's a sweater guy.
I do love a good sweater. That is true. Yeah, I have a lot of Christmas sweaters. In fact, this is my favorite time of year. I have at least 10.
See,
but I think that if and you know this man, Bill Murdoch, he's the reigning king of Christmas sweaters.
I didn't know there was a title attached.
Yeah.
I saw him wearing a championship belt. I wasn't sure what that was for. I thought it was just the MMA that we know he's proficient in, but it could have been for the sweater thing. Yeah, he's always got a sweater in.
He always does. And he's,
it could be 100 degrees out.
I've actually talked to him about this before, and he can one-up me every single time. Do you have any Christmas sweaters?
I don't have any that are, I mean, I have sweaters maybe that I've gotten for Christmas. I don't have any that have the sort of green and red designs on them, or you know, or the you know, just the ones that you would think of. And
you're gonna have to work on that. You're gonna get one ugly sweater in the collection.
Well, hanging ornament sweaters or something.
I mean, come on, that's what we got.
Clever stitching.
Nope. And it's not because I don't want one. I think maybe this is the bat signal out there to the loved ones,
right,
or concerned listeners. To purchase one for me.
Esther,
then.
you've been warned.
I'm sure sleeping right now. When we come back from the break, we are going to talk with Freddie and Brandon about the ugly sweaters. They're going to have a party and a toy drive to go along with it coming up on December 16th. That is going to be a big day for everybody. So stay tuned. We're going to talk more about it in just a second. It's staying here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN live here, Allstate Showcase Studio. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez, Dane here until 2 a.m. And in studio with us, we've got the guys that are helping out there from Brando's Miracle Holiday Cocktail Situation going on until almost, is it till New Year's? Until right around New Year's?
Yeah, the day before New Year's Eve.
The day before New Year's. You can get in there, not only experience the ambiance of the holiday, but some signature cocktails as well. And we have Brandon Volpitta and Freddie Sarkis in studio with us. And Freddie, you've got one more signature cocktail that you've created for us to enjoy, right?
Yeah, this is our...
It doesn't look very cocktailish. It looks sort of just shot-ish.
Yeah.
We had little usually glasses for you. Yeah. We call those little cocktails. This is our signature milk punch. We change the flavors up for different seasons. This is our fall, so it's got a pumpkin spice to it. But it's made with, believe it or not, bourbon and dark rum, then citrus, a little sugar, spices, and then milk. We let the milk do its thing and pull it out afterwards. You'll see it takes the color with it. You end up with a drink that looks clear but tastes light and tangy, but it's actually made with milk.
Wow.
Kind of a fun
That's
little
an
trick.
Interesting taste.
Yeah. No.
I like it.
Now, Freddie, for you to come through, and because this is an entire menu based on this. This isn't just one or two drinks that's in there. You've got, there's got to be at least maybe 10 drinks, right? And that's almost maybe
10 11, drinks, two shots.
11, yeah. 12 with the shots. Yeah. Did you have to study up on this? Is this the kind of thing that you know, just as a guy who's in and around this world, that you have a repertoire of these things? And were there any that you kind of said, like, hey, we got to add this one, or let's build on this one, or let's change this one up a little bit?
Well, we're fortunate that at Brando's we've already been making a really kind of interesting list of cocktails, ever since I've been there, Brandon and I have talked and collaborated and expanded that. So this is something else that we get to bring into the fold. That's the kind of joy of doing the pop up.
The joy,
that's very nice. Joy to the world.
Joy's joyful season.
There's a song somewhere. Perfect. It gives everyone a little something different, a chance for the staff to play around and do some different stuff, for our regular customers to see something different, and for people who are looking for that kind of holiday experience here in Chicago to stop by and check it out.
Well, cool to have the Miracle Situation, the experience of the holiday happen over at Brando's 343 South Dearborn. You guys are not alone. We mentioned that this is a kind of a worldwide thing that is happening all over the place, and every place from like Asheville, North Carolina. I saw Fort Worth, Hong Kong.
Yeah, it's all over. Everywhere.
Do you guys get on a conference call, before this? Like, go for Hong Kong.
New York's usually the hub for everything in the world, pretty much. So that's where our team is based. We have a PR team based there, and everybody else is based over there. They fly around to the different cities if there's lots of help needed.
But everything from Orlando, Florida, Paris, France. You get
they're everywhere.
So this has been like kind of a virtual cocktail think tank, right? So everybody's kind of weighing in and making it as great as it can be. You've got the world with the input, and it's exciting stuff happening over at 343. South Dearborn. We talked before we went to the break, the beauty of the ugly sweater. I mean, I kind of feel bad calling it the ugly sweater, but it's more like Christmas sweater, right?
Yeah, there's a certain era to it. You get that feeling when you're wearing it in Christmas.
It's the kind of thing.
It's the only time of the year you can wear it.
Yeah,
it's
true.
It's like the white patent leather shoes,
Clark, I noticed you're looking at my shoes.
Right. Like Cousin Eddie loved.
Yeah.
But in certain situations, they're not only, perfect, they're beautiful, right? So talk a little bit about the ugly sweater Christmas party, and then, of course, you built in a toy drive so people have all the reasons in the world to go.
Absolutely. So we've been doing it for a couple of years now as an event that a bartender throws. So him and his regulars and some of his friends. And I talked to him this year, and I was like, listen, Phil, you wanna do an event? You want to make this something we can really do every year? Do a toy drive with it and all that kind of stuff. And he was like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So we actually partnered with our foundation, the Windy City Hockey Foundation, for this toy drive.
Nice.
So every toy you bring enters you into a raffle with unlimited entries. And we're announcing the winners on our Facebook page. So we encourage anybody that wants to come out to it to bring at least a toy or something. Help out the kids of our great city that need the help. And with that, you get to have a good time, wear an ugly sweater, or come as a drunk Santa.
Drunk Santa. I know. I noticed that, the drunk Santa outfit.
Now, here's the thing, and it's a little bit late, so I think we can take some liberties on discussing some maybe more adult-oriented subjects, right? The Santa, because Santa is a traditionally like a kid-related character, right?
Absolutely.
Of course, he's traditional and throughout the ages and all that. But what makes a Santa a drunk Santa, other than his actions? Because it says the outfit, so you don't. So is it that he is?
Have
maybe
you
thrown up on himself, or
not necessarily throw up? But have you ever seen some bachelorettes walk out of some of the River North bars, a little disheveled?
Okay.
Yeah, so that, yeah, disheveled.
Kind of like Bad Santa.
That's a perfect example.
Or Dan Aykroyd in Trading Places.
Oh,
that's
another good one. That was
right. If they pulled a fish out of the costume, then we know it's authentic.
So a little disheveled.
A little disheveled. Your hair all over the place. Yeah, right. Maybe the beard falling down like a bad mall Santa. And you got to play with it. You bring your ideas and we'll see what you can do. There you go.
So you're able to build in a little bit of the artistic license as well. And here's the prize. You talk about hockey. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Brandon, but WGN Radio is the home for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Absolutely. Blackhawks fans since age zero.
Age zero, yeah, right? From the embryo stage right there. First place wins two tickets to the Blackhawks.
Yes, sir.
Second place wins $100 and a current
bar tab.
Yeah, so if you rack up a big bar tab, that's paid.
That's kind of like gambling, right?
Well, a little bit.
Roll the dice. You never know. You could get it all taken care of.
That's like hoping for that snow day or something. Like, don't do your homework. Let it ride. It's snowing. And then figuring you're not going to study for the test. Third place wins $20 gift certificate to Brando's. That is great. And when you think about coming up, you know, Joe Gentile used to always say that New Year's Eve was amateur night. Right?
Oh, yeah.
But when it comes to the perfect New Year's Eve party, we can all just aspire to wear a paper hat and the kazoo and have the ball drop at the Embassy Suites in Schaumburg. We can all aspire to that. But for those people that have different ideas, right, you guys are throwing a New Year's Eve party as well, right?
Yeah, we are. It's the 10th annual, pretty much. We're doing an open bar and food package, and that we actually have early bird tickets available at brandoschicago.com. Our New Year's Eve party is a very
good time. Yeah, give it, because you got kind of the 20s vibe. So what is different about it? I mean, is it something? I haven't been to a New
Year's
Eve
party. It's all decked out. It's really just about everybody coming together and having a great time celebrating the New Year, like pretty much every New Year's party. The great thing about us, though, is we are one of the most diverse bars in the city. If you come to Brando's, you will find every walk of life in that bar. Every race, every religion, every creed, every age. We have lawyers that work in the federal buildings, and we have hipsters from Wicker Park. Everything.
So it's kind of the United Nations of cocktails.
That's how I put it. I call us the United Nations when I'm there.
The UNOC.
Yeah.
United Nation of Cocktails.
Oh. Yeah, so it's a good time. Everybody comes together and has a good time and just celebrates the New Year with everybody.
Man, there's so many reasons to go to Brando's over from between now and New Year's.
The end of the year, absolutely.
You know, get your sweater, get your Santa, costume
about eight
dirty.
Of these cocktails on
come to shovel 12. The Santa. Shovel. Maybe win some Blackhawks tickets.
Yeah, you never know. A lot of different reasons. So last thing, give the for Miracle, which is coming up, the kind of holiday cocktail experience that is going on until New Year's, and then you've got the actual New Year's Eve party. Give the website, the address, so people can come out and see you at Brando's.
Yes, it is Brando Speakeasy at 343 South Dearborn. Our website is brandochicago.com, and we actually have a tab for our New Year's Eve party and also for the Miracle Party, so both sections can give you all the information that you need. Again, it's brandochicago.com, and the address is 343 South Dearborn Street in the Loop.
Lots of ways to celebrate. Sounds festive, delicious in a lot of ways, and always
fantastic.
A lot of fun.
Very welcoming and inviting.
You guys have built in a lot of fun. Freddie and Brandon, thanks so much for doing what you're doing. Thanks for being on WGN today.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to send it to news. And then after the news, we're going to talk with Blake Stubbs about your favorite holiday movie. Some of those may be running on a loop at Brando's. You never know.
It could be. Yeah.
720 WGN. I hate to start the segment. Great song. Good job. 720 WGN live here, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Pretty late. Patty Vasquez, Dane in until 2 a.m. with you. Dino Tiberi to my right. Michael Heidemann in the booth as well. And on the line, this is the guy that we've talked. We have not gotten an opportunity to do the full holiday movie thing, but when you think about people getting out and about, this is not, you know, the sweater, do you know, this is a certain time and a place for the sweater.
Right, and, you know, it'd be a good time to incorporate that into your Christmas viewing. You could wear the sweater while you're watching one of these movies we're going to discuss.
One of these cocktails.
And you just blend it all in together.
You just have the
it's
whole
all
thing.
Wrapped up in a nice little bow.
You got one, and then a disheveled Santa storms in, and then you use that opportunity to use the restroom. Who knows? But on the line with this is the guy that's got his hand on his pulse of all things movies when it comes to holiday movies. That is no exception, the one and only Blockbuster. Blake Stubbs, welcome to WGN.
Hey there, guys. How are you?
What's going on, Blake? How are you?
Oh, hanging in there. I was actually prepping my list. I got a lot of things to talk about. We got different categories. I love talking about this stuff. Every chance I get with anybody. I'm just glad I get to do it on WGN.
Well, here's the thing: as I was wondering this, and we've got a list as well. You know, I've got the 25 best Christmas movies of all time by the fine folks over at Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. And if they don't know, then who would? But you wonder. You think about certain actors that have kind of establish themselves as stars in a musical genre. And I don't know if holiday movies kind of fits. I think it does. It certainly does for the conversation here. But do you think like action heroes, you know, Dino, your favorite action hero is Vin Diesel, obviously. And so of course, you know, you always mention that.
Oh, sure.
You know, but when you think about other types of movies, you know, whether it's, you know, scary movies, horror movies, whether it's sports related movies, you know, baseball ones, you know, Kevin Costner, right? Doesn't he kind of fit? Like, you're going to make a movie about a baseball team or a washed up player, or you're going to get Kevin Costner involved somehow.
Well, you may not now, but you did back then when he was in his heyday.
I'm just saying he's made more than his share of those kind of movies.
I just watched one of them today.
Yes. Okay. See, there you go. And so I'm wondering, like, are there actors that, you know, they may have appeared in other movies or maybe a, you know, Brill Cream commercial or something, but that really kind of, you know, you remember them as not necessarily just because the movie was great, but they happened to be like great holiday movie actors.
Oh, see, that's tough. Because you run into situations where, I mean, in the animated films, you had some similar voice actors that would come along and they'd be in multiple productions because of the studio that was putting them together. Off the top of my head.
Well, Burl Ives, right?
Silver and gold.
Burl Ives is a big one. Singing, especially, you know, from his musical talent,
Pride of Eastern Illinois.
Voice, just his general speaking voice was a big thing. The other thing you run into is, you know, things like, you know, Bing Crosby would be a big one. White Christmas, Holiday Inn. Those are really big holiday movies. A lot of people love to watch.
Did Bing Crosby do, I mean, other than now, and 312-981-7200, our vast listening audience, and I'm sure there's a lot of big Bing Crosby fans. I mean, he's an iconic kind of television and entertainment legend. But I only remember him, and granted, I have not, you know, watched a ton of it as Blake is looking it up, but I'm trying to think. You see him in those specials, you know, or with a sweater there with a fireplace.
Yeah. He was in all the Bob Hope movies that they did.
Did he do a bunch of movies, or was he more of just a singer? Yeah, I don't know.
I think he had a little bit of both. He did some Bob Hope movies when they were paired up. And
USO tours?
Yeah.
So, Blake, what do you think? Bing Crosby, yeah, but that's a great one. That's a great suggestion because you really do think of, he was so good at the holiday stuff.
Yeah. Definitely was. And I mean, I'm looking at a lot of the movies that I've written down in my list, and I'm trying to piece together, like, oh, this actor was in that, and that actor was in this. But there's not a huge amount of crossover off the top of my head. And look, here's the funny thing. As we're talking, there's going to be connections that are going to come to me. And I'm going to, you know, drop them and just say, oh, yeah, here was one that, you know, just comes to mind. But as of right now, like looking at my big three, I don't really have any connections between them other than maybe like a song from one was used in the other two, or something along those lines. But as far as people who are like perennial Christmas or holiday film actors or actresses, it's my understanding that if you've worked for the Hallmark Channel, you might have made five or six Christmas movies.
Meredith Baxter Burney.
Like an Ed Asner. I think, sure, he's made some.
I think Lacey Chabert, who was in Mean Girls, and she was one of the original voices on Family Guy, I think, in the first season. She's done a few as well. So, I mean, you kind of run into those scenarios, but as far as like the movies I've kind of, you know, prepared to talk about, I've kind of broken them down by category, and they're from different eras, different styles, not a whole lot of crossover. And I think it's because they're all made by very different people and they're all made at very different times. That's the other thing.
We were talking about what are the essential ingredients for a Christmas film, and we got a chance to kind of touch on this a little bit over the weekend. You know, you got to have, well, obviously, you know, Christmas has got to be sort of the backdrop of it. And we were thinking whether there was, you know, the whether a horror movie could also be a Christmas movie. We talked about that. But one thing we did get from the 773, you know, Nick DiGilio obviously talks a ton of movies, says that Die Hard is in there. And for you, Blake Stubbs, this is one of your, you know, this is a conversation starter, right? It's like that's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, Die Hard. I mean, look, this is the debate that rages almost every year around this time of year, and it's a big Facebook, Twitter, let's all back and forth. It is, it isn't. I don't care. Look, to me, there's only one answer, and it's that Die Hard is a Christmas film because at its heart, the impetus for the story is that a father who has, you know, recently separated from the mother and the mother had to move with the kids is coming home for Christmas, and he's going to see his kids and be with his wife, and they're going to have the family all together. And then, of course, some, you know, terrorists and thieves, like master thieves, sort of step in and completely ruin the day, and then he has to save it. And it's, you know, ultra violent, and there's explosions and action and zingers, and there's some heartwarming stories in there too. But the other thing is too, and they're present in the story, especially the Al Powell story, that, you know, is all about how the guy got back on the street and back on the beat. But the whole movie is about the Christmas, you know, sort of family tradition at the beginning. And that's really his key motivator throughout the whole film, is to save his wife and go home at the end of it. So I think that's, you know, that's kind of similar to things you run into, I don't want to say tropes, but I want to say similar narrative arcs that you run into, something like It's a Wonderful Life. You know, George Bailey is having this crisis, this conflict, but in the end, like, he does love his family. It's just a matter of, you know, coming to terms with this reality and accepting things and then being a whole new man by the end of it.
You know,
there's not a whole lot of difference between him and John McClane, if you think of it.
And you did see kind of that really tough side of him too. Remember when he's kind of snapped at Zuzu there for a second.
Oh, and then he went off on Mr. Potter too. That was another scene where he was all ticked off.
Wasn't there a barroom brawl too with
when he punched
down the stairs or out the door? You two pixies or whatever.
You two pixies, yeah. True to the door, out the window.
Here's one thing I wanted to add. When we come back from the break, this was something I didn't know was a real thing. I mean, you obviously know that there are certain ones that find themselves in this particular state. But, right. You know, over at Brando's, they've got a drunk Santa outfit contest. And surprisingly, when we come back from the break, Blake, we're going to talk about it. There are a number of movies where the Santa in that kind of state of disrepair is front and center. So stay tuned here. 312-981-7200. You can send in your favorite holiday movies. We're going to mention them all as we go through some of this list and touch on some of the different ways that people are enjoying holiday movies and some surprises too. So keep it here. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN live here, Allstate Showcase Studio here until 2 a.m. Pretty late. Daniel here with you. Dino Tiberi to my right. Mike Heideman in the booth. Blake Stubbs, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, is on the line. And this is an excellent choice, Mike, because, you know, Dean Martin, he made Christmas albums. He was great. He's an iconic voice. But he often would find himself, maybe not in a Santa costume, but disheveled, at least. Right? You know, he's always out there with a drink.
Probably explains a few things about my life since I was named after him. So.
Oh, sorry about that, dude.
It's okay.
You're the new and improver. You're the upgrade.
That's
right. You're Dean 2.0. Blake, welcome back. And we wanted to get some of those different movies where the I don't want to say the drunk, but the disheveled Santa is kind of front and center in the films.
Well, I'm going to save the best for last, but to kick off, the brief moment where Kevin McAllister confronts Santa in the street on Home Alone.
I remember that.
Santa's definitely had a little too much eggnog, and he's ready to go home, and he's struggling with his keys, and, you know, it's just not what a young child thinks of Santa. Yeah, it's just not. It's funny. It's good comedy, but that's probably the first one that came to mind, at least in my mind, like from when I was younger. You know, when was the first time I saw Santa not totally be Santa? That would be the first one that I can recall, because I saw that movie in theaters as a kid and fell in love with it. I mean, who didn't at the time?
Now, Blake, you're always a glasses half full guy, you know, wide eyed and, you know, and optimistic and, you know, student of the world. Right. But, you know, always seeing the good side of people and Santas and all that kind of stuff. You know, as a kid in the theater and you see Santa represented in this way. Was that one of the first things that started cracking the veil of maybe Santa, you know, can be more than just the hypothetical guy on the roof, that maybe there's a lot of Santas out there and maybe some of them are drunk?
Yeah, and I would say it was one of the ones that helped crack that lid open, I guess. The big one, though, is always probably, movies that were parodied, because they parodied Miracle on 34th Street a lot. and you would see like the kid pull the beard and then the beard would come off. And it's like, you know, it was always present. It was always like in front of, you know, what I was seeing. But like the Home Alone thing is just always the first real vivid memory. You know, it's the first big one because it was a huge movie. I mean, it made tons of money. Everybody, it's one of the standards. A lot of people watch it. It's one of their go-to movies every year. And it's still, you know, there's parts of it that still really hold up. And I just, as soon as you said we need a disheveled Santa, that was the first image that popped into my mind. You know, and next you got Trading Places. You know, Dan Aykroyd walks around all disheveled in a Santa outfit for a fair portion of the film. Yeah, you know, pretty understandable. And then honestly, it's never sat right with me, and I might get flack for this one, but in A Christmas Story, when Ralphie visits Santa and he gets the boot to the face, yeah, I also think that Santa was a big, you know, ideal destroyer, you know, of what Santa is and what Santa's all about. Kind of scary the way they filmed it, to be honest with you.
I would agree with you on that one. That was.
You remember when he's getting kicked down the slide and then he has to say, like, it's a, yep. The rival with the, you know, the compass in the stock and all that kind of stuff. And he just kicks his foot on his head and just
shoves him.
Well, you know, there's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of kids out there. And I think if you don't take into consideration the enormous like pressures of the job, then you might think that he was a little insensitive, you know, I think. So, Dino, your thoughts? You have one that...
Well, he mentioned a couple that I was thinking of. Christmas Story, I watch it every year. Trading Places, of course, another one I watch every year. And then there's Bad Santa. You know, I don't watch it every year, but I know that one was the one that...
Bad Santa.
...took it to another level.
Where they even had, like, the disheveled... Yep. You even had the elves getting in on the disheveledness.
You did. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting things you can learn if you start reading up about the production of that film. There's an article that kind of, or a story that kind of resurfaces, especially now in this climate, that, you know, the Weinsteins were helping produce that film when it was being made. And they were trying to make it a very different film from the film we actually get to see. And if you ever get to see a director's cut version of it, watch it. It's the best possible version to see. But Billy Bob Thornton, he's definitely under the influence for real in a lot of those scenes. He is the finest actor on the planet. But there's I remember being at an audience or at a screening Q&A with the director and the editor, Terry Zweigoff and Robert Hoffman. And they were talking about how, like, at the time this was being filmed, you had John Ritter giving his final performance, okay, because he died while they were making the film. And then you had Bernie Mac, you know, who several years later was going to tragically pass away. But Billy Bob was going through his divorce with Angelina Jolie in the middle of making that movie. So his whole life was kind of in upheaval. And they were, you know, making this movie in this insanely hot mall that was like an abandoned shopping mall that they had like commandeered to make the movie in. Like, to go down the rabbit hole of learning about that movie, it will make you appreciate it so much more. But it is. It's probably the most foul-mouthed, one of the most foul-mouthed. You know, it's crude.
Tasteless.
Tasteless. But at the same time, laugh out loud funny, brilliant comedic performances. It's just such an offbeat film that anytime somebody's making a holiday list, if I don't see Bad Santa on there, I grab the first pen I can find and I etch it in there because people should watch it. It's such a hilarious movie.
From the movie connections, are there, I mean, because it is so strange. When I first saw it, I was like, I cannot believe this, that I'm even watching this. There's no human being ever that would be in that situation that would act this way. And there probably really, really isn't. You know, it's just such an affront to like everything about Christmas and everything about Santa himself, right? It's just like so horrible. He just trashes the entire situation. But was there, and Blake, did you ever think of this too? Is okay, so correct me if I'm wrong, right? He somehow talks his way into this house where this kid is living there by himself, right? And it kind of reminds me of sort of, because he's sort of like the Grinch. Right. You know, Billy Bob Thornton has kind of got that Grinch character, and the little kid is, you know, naive and but filled with hope. Right. Sort of like a Who from Whoville. Yeah. You know, is there possible that there may have been some of that in the thought process?
It might have been. I think it's just a much more visceral
He's
Grinch
like, no.
than we've ever experienced. You know, somebody that, you know, I mean, look, at some point in someone's life, one might cross a person as crass, crude, and just downright, you know, deplorable would be the word. It would be a proper word, I think, in this case. You know, as the character Billy Bob's playing, you hope you don't get to spend a lot of time with him, But at the same time, I mean, there are people that like to grift, and that's kind of what he's like, a bad grifter, like a really bad grifter. But he just comes upon these people that are so nice and easily swayed. And at the same time, you know, it was a kid living with his grandma, and his grandma was very old and not, you know, in the best of health. Played by Cloris Leachman.
Of course.
And she's brilliant in it. So, I mean, it's just like, you know, anybody. Yeah, I think it. But at the same time, to set the movie at Christmas, like, it, there's a lot of movies that we could talk about here. Like, for instance, Die Hard. Someone made the point that, like, look, Die Hard doesn't have to be set at Christmas. You're right, it doesn't, but it was. And it's a big part of the story to me. However, Bad Santa, I think if you did any other type of film, it wouldn't fly. It had to be Christmas. It had to be Bad Santa.
Well, as we kind of deconstruct Bad Santa just a little bit, and for the last time before we send it to break, and then also news, is you still had, he still kind of, there was a redemption at the end, sort of, you know, like an Ebenezer Scrooge type moment where he turns into like a decent, I don't want to say decent because he had a long way to go, but a less offensive and horrible person, and makes some decisions that would have been uncharacteristic with the person earlier in the film, and not always so, you know, evil and self-serving.
Right. It's more that he starts to care about people. That's his emotional growth. He finds certain people that he cares about, and he's willing to help. And in the end, he's really all about himself. And that's kind of like why the movie. And again, remember how I was telling you how the producers were trying to make the movie something that it isn't, like, in the end, and they didn't win. Like, the movie is what was intended. Sometimes people are just going to stay the way they are, but they can have these moments of clarity, these moments of redemption. So, yeah, definitely.
We're going to take a break, then we're going to come back and send it to news. When we come back from the news, we're going to have Blake on with us talking a little bit of the holiday movies. You can share yours as well, 312-981-7200. And then Blake's got some different categories for the holiday movies, and then some of his favorites that maybe you're not familiar with that you should maybe check out. Now that you can, of course, see anything at any time, everything is on demand during the holiday season. So quick break here, 720 WGN.
On Friday, December 15th, celebrate the most wonderful time of the year with the WGN Radio Holiday Spectacular. Hear your favorite hosts in a rare ensemble of seasonal songs and classic Yuletide tales. Plus live music from Rosie and the Rivets. December 15th, 10 a.m. to noon. Sponsored by American Sale.
You own a small business and wish you had additional capital for this holiday season? Well, for a lot of companies, this is make or break it time. And if you've been in business for over a year and have revenues of over $10,000 a month, you can get fast financing through Lender. With Lender, approval of funding from $10,000 to $300,000 can occur in as little as 48 hours. That's right, 48 hours, meaning it's not too late for the holidays. And with Lender, you can use the money for any business purpose. Lender specializes in helping those businesses, and they can help fast. Perhaps you need funds for additional workers, or maybe to help meet payroll, additional inventory. What about marketing your business? Call Lender at 312-800-0202. The application process is simple, transparent, and fast. They're local in Chicago. Give them a call. They're at 312-800-0202. That's 312-800-0202. Quick funds to help your small business grow. Don't survive. Thrive with Lender. 312-800-0202.
Are you thinking about a kitchen or bathroom remodel or repair? Maybe a window, siding, or roof repair? Whatever home improvement help you need, trust MegaPros. Go to helpme.megapros.com. Enter your name, email, and a home improvement issue, and the MegaPros will get right back in touch with you to schedule your free estimate. Ease your mind and let MegaPros handle all of your home improvement issues. The MegaPros are experts with decades of experience and hundreds of satisfied customers. Whether your job is big or small, give MegaPros a call at 847-658-8989. MegaPros is determined to earn your complete satisfaction with their exclusive partnership guarantee. You don't pay one dime until you're 100% satisfied. Get a free quote today from MegaPros expert who will come to you to inspect the area and provide a prompt written estimate. Call now and have your home improvements done before the holidays. One call does it all. Call 847-658-8989. That's 847-658-8989, or email them at helpme.megapros.com. Expertise delivered. Right now it is 1:30 and news time. When we come back from the news, we're going to have Blake Stubbs talking all of your favorite holiday hits and some great movies you got to get out there, see some a couple surprises along the way. 312-981-7200, and you can add yours as well. We will share them. 720 WGN, pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Dane here until 2 a.m. so we've got little bit more time here with Blake Stubbs talking holiday movies. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs has his hand on the pulse of all things cinema, and this is one of his favorite times of the year. And Dino Tiberi to my right as well. And Mike, now, do you have a favorite holiday movie? Is there a certain time that you kind of pull those movies out and enjoy them? Is it?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great time of the year to see movies, and you see them so much when you're watching TV. I think that even more than Halloween, this is the time when they all come through. I've always, I mean, an instant classic is always going to be Elf. I love that movie. Watching It's a Wonderful Life with my dad is always a good memory. So I think those are my two favorites for sure. Yeah.
All right, cool. It's a Wonderful Life. Lots of people coming in with that one. Dino, that's...
Yeah, Mike just said, I just watched that with my dad on the other night. So that's every year has got to be it's a must-see.
So, okay, so Blake and Blake Stubbs, welcome back to WGN. And so It's a Wonderful Life is one you got to figure. It's going to be in that kind of team photo of things that people like. We've had people kind of check in with a couple other. A Christmas Carol is one, and there's a handful of versions of that. I know I've seen the Henry Winkler version, which is, and then of course
you got
the really old one, which was actually very scary. You got that one, and then Elf. People have checked in with that. Here's one of the other ones too from the 440. One of the in between Christmas movies was Trapped in Paradise with Nicolas Cage.
Oh no.
And John Lovitz, I believe. Yeah. Oh, I remember seeing that.
Nicolas Cage.
Absolutely.
Well, Nicolas Cage, this is a little stretchy, people. 312-981-7200, but you know, continue to stretch. That's fine. We'll definitely mention him. But someone had also put in Nicolas Cage in the movie. I think it was a Family Man. Was that it? Where somehow he had gotten into an alternative universe?
Yes.
Where he lost his Ferrari 612 Scaglietti, which was very disappointing, and his job being like an international, you know, stockbroking, you know, financier, and then got a job working for the father-in-law's tire company. But it was some kind of weird dream. Do you remember this movie, Blake?
Yeah, it's okay. First of all, it's a Nicolas Cage film,
yeah,
and while I know that he finds a way to give 110%, even though most actors can only give 100 in everything that he does, some of these have blended together for me. But I do recall there being Nicolas Cage, and I know the holidays were a part of it. You know what I mean? Like I do remember this kind of coming together. Yeah, I won't write it off. I won't write it off for that point alone.
Well, it kind of fits into that category where, you know, the movie's about, you know, relationships and valuing people and kind of seeing what's really important. Is it all about the money or is it about the special certain someone? And then Christmas is a backdrop, right? You know, this is one of those times where I think we all can relate to kind of recognizing, you know, the importance of those relationships. And so I think it fits into that category, right, where it's not necessarily a Christmas movie, but Christmas is, you know,
certainly
part of it for sure.
Right, right. And I think that the other thing, too, is, you know, like if you want to go down Nicolas Cage, you know, road, you know, they
no,
you can
do we
talk
have
about
to?
Horror movies, too. Sure. No, but I was just going to say you can talk about horror movies, too, because they're scary that are set at Christmas or are Christmas related. And, you know, the big one for me is always going to be Gremlins. As a kid, that movie did scare me. And I think it, you know, it's a lot of fun to watch this time of year, especially if you haven't seen it in a few years. Because this is not the type of movie that's like It's a Wonderful Life or A Christmas Story, and it's going to be on TV all day, every day, you know, the whole day. In fact, there was one year where I actually saw It's a Wonderful Life, but I didn't see it in one sitting. I saw it in three different sittings at three different Christmases. By the time the day was over and I'd been to three different places, I'd seen the whole film with my entire family, including extended family. So it was one of the I think that, you know, when you think of movies like Gremlins, that most recently the movie Krampus came out, and it's sort of in that vein. It's supposed to be scary. It's set at Christmas. The whole thing is about Christmas, family coming over, family you don't like, all that stuff.
Well,
definitely plays into it.
Well, like, here's the thing that you get with Gremlins and also with Krampus, and for the listeners that may not be aware of it, I guess, you know, check it out, but is that there's ways to avoid the unfortunate and sometimes deadly circumstances that happen. So the Gremlins is very simple, right? You don't feed them.
And you don't get them wet.
You don't get them wet. Don't feed them after midnight or something like that. And then with Krampus, wasn't there something, you had to do something wrong or be mean to people or something, and then he came and killed you. But there was ways to avoid the certain death, right?
There's always things you can do, but it's much like, you know, avoiding a slasher in a slasher film. You know, as long as you follow the rules, you'll be fine. Of course, that doesn't really apply when it's this, you know, demonic entity that's coming as it does annually, and it's right outside your house. And it's not going anywhere else. Apparently, your house is the only one that matters. That's like the whole thing when you get into some of these more supernatural, you know, horror-based Christmas films.
Where does The Nightmare Before Christmas fall in then?
See, now here's the thing. I was trying to write down where would I put that if I was categorizing it. And for me, that's both an animated film and a modern classic for the holiday, you know, okay. A modern holiday classic. Now it is now coming into next year. I believe it's going to be 25 years old.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
So you'll probably see a re-release and things like that. You know, one would hope, because it's a great movie to see in a theater. But at the same time, I mean, it's definitely, it's an achievement as far as stop motion animation goes. And, you know, the music, Danny Elfman, who sang, you know, a vast majority of the score himself, did a bang up job on it. And then, you know, it's also led by that, you know, that Tim Burton style and feel, and you can't get away from it. But it's also kind of the double down movie. If the end of the year is like your time for the holidays, and it starts at Halloween, and you know somebody like that, they love Halloween and they love Christmas. Nightmare Before Christmas is the only movie they're watching on repeat from October 31st until the end of the year. Yeah. And you know what? That's fine, because it's a great movie and there's no reason not to. But the other thing is too, like Elf was mentioned, that's another modern classic. In fact, that's probably the most recent true modern classic, because I see it played everywhere, talked about everywhere. And I was late to the party. I didn't see it until just a couple of years ago. And it's been a great regret as far as someone who loves movies, truly.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, watches them constantly. For some reason, Elf just didn't make itself aware to me, or I shouldn't say
what?
Aware, just didn't, you know, present itself to me. Well, here's the thing. I'm an only child, so, like, I don't have siblings who might have caught it and been like, you got to see this. And then as far as friends go, like, everybody talked about it, and they quoted it, and it kind of became like a Christmas Caddyshack. You know, like just so quotable and enjoyable. And I was like, oh, I'll see it eventually. But I'll see it eventually just kept going and going and going. And then I'm just watching my classics every year, or, you know, my favorites. And I wasn't making room for something new.
We know that it's tough.
Mistake.
We know that it's tough to break into like the team photo of, you know, kind of official Christmas movies. It's not easy, right? There's a handful of kind of tried and trues that you got to see over and over again. It's tough to break in. You know, a guy, and we want to mention some of the ones that the listeners are doing. You can add yours, 231-298-17200 is from the 847. And a guy that was rarely associated with demonic possession was Jack Lemmon, right? And the Lemon Drop Kid with Jack Lemmon and Bob Hope has been listed. And, I mean, that's a classic, right?
Absolutely. I mean, well, look, Jack Lemmon is one of my all-time favorites. So, yes, I would – you don't have to sell me on that one. I think it's the point that, you know, at this point, like, I'm thinking of, you know, what are the offbeat movies? You know, the ones that I've seen that I don't know a lot of other people have seen. Or maybe they saw, but, like, they've never revisited or never thought of. And I mentioned this the other day. It's a movie I would love to mention again. It's Arthur Christmas. You know, that's an animated movie, and it's done by the Aardman Studio, who does all the Wallace and Gromit stuff.
Yeah, no.
So,
no, well, yeah. Blake, I wanted to mention, because Dino's thinking about, because I remember my, you know, I had the misconception that it would have fallen into the disheveled and drunken Santa category, right, with Dudley Moore playing the Arthur Christmas.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
but it was
Right. It was, although, you know, Dudley Moore did play an elf in the Santa Claus movie. But as far as Arthur Christmas goes, animated film about the son of Santa helping save Christmas. And it has this really cool take on how high tech Santa's operation is, with, you know, the elves being like a special SWAT team that, you know, delivers the presents and helps him do it all. And it's got a lot of charm and heart, and it was just a very, you know, a welcome surprise when I saw it in theaters several years ago. In fact, I think it might be approaching 8 to 10 years old at this point. But it was one of those that, like, very critically acclaimed, did okay, but not so much in the U.S. And, you know, I mean, it didn't just find its audience here. It's not one you see broadcast on TV. But when people are looking for something new that isn't the same tried and trues, and they want to, you know, show their kids something they probably haven't seen, I say go watch Arthur Christmas. Maybe you won't like it, but it's an Aardman film, and they make good stuff. So it's a big one for me.
That's number 8 on the list from Rotten Tomatoes here that we have in front of us.
There you go.
So, yep, you're right. Right behind Die Hard.
You know, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Julie on. She's going to bring up the movie that she's got. She's got one of those, as well as we're going to talk about, you mentioned some old movies and some new movies, and there's some movies from around the world that are into the team photo as well. I know you had one from Finland, and then we've got Tokyo Godfathers is also on the list as well, pretty high up. So keep it here, Julie. Hold on. We're going to get to you as soon as we come back from this break. It's staying here on 720 WGN.